Welcome to the Michael Yu Podcast. We have a very special guest today, Mr. Poe, the Poe Man.
So special.
Yeah.
Thanks for having me, Michael.
Oh, no, thanks for being on the pod, Jeff. So Jeff Poe is a realtor here at Oakwind Realty, one of our awesome agents that we have at the company. Jeff, why don't you introduce a little bit about your, like the start of your professional career as a realtor.
Right. My name's Jeff Poe. I started in 2008, right in the recession.
Wow, okay.
Kind of fell into it. Kind of by fluke. I didn't really ever think about being a real estate agent ever. I guess background is I graduated in 1999, no idea what I wanted to do. Arts, sciences at university never appealed to me, so I enrolled at BCIT. I did the electrical engineering program. Hated it.
Okay.
After a year, I hated it. I stuck it out. I finished it, got my diploma of technology, and I carried it to my job at SportCheck.
Okay. So engineering to SportCheck.
Yeah, I stayed at SportCheck. I got the job from my career in personal planning. So I stayed there, and then my brother-in-law got a job at a .com, and then I joined the call center, and they're mostly US-based, selling products online to the states.
Right.
And I was picking up 80 to 100 calls a day, and customers don't call to say thank you, they call to say F you.
Right.
Okay, this is getting old. So I applied for school at Capilano College, the pre-commerce program, did that, transferred to university, okay. Got my Bachelor of Commerce. I'm a professional student.
Whoa.
Right, got my Bachelor of Commerce and then graduated 2007. And then I went on a bit of a backpacking trip, came back. Okay, what am I going to do with my life? I'm 26.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm like, I need to catch up. Living Vancouver, I needed to catch up. So I didn't want to take on a marketing job out east. I wanted to stay home. I have a lot of family and friends here. So
right.
While I was applying for sales jobs, because I was looking for salary plus commission, I was watching HGTV all day long.
Mm-hmm.
And my girlfriend at the time sends me a website and it's like, oh, we should buy this home. It's like $10.9 million. And then it's like Jason Soprovich's website.
Right.
Like, oh gosh, like what do these guys make? Call my buddy. He told me that realtors make 6%. That's a lie.
Yeah.
Anyway, so I signed up for the course and then I became licensed in June 2008 without any idea about real estate or sales training.
Wow.
I always wanted to get into real estate in terms of investing.
Mm-hmm.
So just this notepad here I'm showing you, I read Rich Dad, Poor Dad while I was on my backpacking trip. Think about assets, liabilities,
right.
Income, yep. Passive income. So I've always kind of been, not obsessed, well lately I have been, but I've always been interested in passive income.
Right.
And getting your money work for you. And I said, well, why not? So I got into real estate. And while I'm trying to seek out deals and buy an investment property, I could help people buy and sell homes.
Yeah.
So my first year, I made $5,000.
Wow.
I did one sale.
Wow. Okay.
And from June to December,
jeez.
2008 recession.
Right.
I sold a studio, and I sold my pickup truck, and got into a used, quote unquote luxury car. Sold my truck for $8,000, bought the used car for $23,000. I was
reading
the whole $15,000 startup costs, websites, signage. It just added up. So after a year, I was $30,000 in debt.
Wow. Right,
so I toughed it out. Toughed it out. And then I started getting some sales going in 2009. And then I bought my first rental property. Lived at home, parents' house, and I bought a rental property. And it was a home that I really wanted to live in as well. Until I got the ball rolling, my career going, I lived at home and I rented that out for a couple of years.
That's challenging for a lot of young guys to do.
It is. Well, you know what? The thing is, my parents didn't come from money. They're not wealthy. My dad was a mechanic. My mom was always kind of admin. But they had a free and clear home.
Wow.
No mortgage on it.
Awesome.
And another reason why I believed in real estate was my parents bought acreage out in Mission, and that helped us get through school. So I didn't have any student loans. They bought my first truck, which I sold, right? So they did as much as they could to help me, so I did get help. you know, I do kind of feel like, oh man, I want to be self-made. But at the same time, if help is there, take it.
Oh yeah, for sure. If there's resources in front of you, you gotta snatch
and sometimes those, people have these resources and they waste it.
Right.
So I was toughing it out. I 2010, I found a house in New Westminster, and it was 100 years old.
Well,
and I'm not a handy guy.
Right.
Right. So 100-year-old house. Sorry, I'm going to backtrack. When I bought my investment condo, I said, Mom, Dad, I know you guys don't have money, but your home is free and clear. Can I please have access to your line of credit?
Hmm.
And Asian people don't like interest. Well, no one does. Not right. anything. People don't like interest. So I'm like, I'll cut the interest checks.
Right.
So I got the line of credit for the down payment. The rent covered my mortgage and part of the, actually my insurance and my property taxes. Mm-hmm. So I just kind of subsidized the interest
right.
and the property tax. Wow. Sorry, the strata fee.
The strata fees.
Right, so after that, I felt more comfortable. I had a bit of equity going to 2010. I felt more comfortable with, you know, being a real estate agent.
Right.
I bought a 100-year-old house in New Westminster with 3 suites.
Wow.
So while I was, 28 then, 27 and a half.
Wow.
All my friends were out at the clubs, popping bottles, right? They're just, you know, just partying it up. And I was, you know, I'm a realtor. I worked 7 days a week at the time. I had dress clothes in my car, but at the same time, I had a ladder diagonally in my car because it was small.
Yeah.
I had paint trays, I had toolboxes, vacuums, and I had a bag of dead mice.
From the house. Wow.
Right. So I went through it. I grinded. So I'm trying not to be the typical, you know, quote unquote millennial. I actually just worked for my money, and I always lived lean. The first brokerage I started with, I think any brokerage, 2008, that was kind of the recession.
Right.
And I saw agents having to sell their recreational properties, sell their horses. I there's two agents, not going to mention names, but one said he needed to make 20 grand a month to live. And another one needed 13. And this is back when housing prices were lower.
Yeah.
It's like, how are your expenses so high?
Right.
So I learned to live lean. Like I do till this day. I never got caught up with the fancy cars, the fancy suits, the fancy dinners. Like my wallet's always full of cash because I still eat Vietnamese and Chinese. Anything takes cash only, right? Yeah. Like, I'm not cheap. Like I try to save my money so I can spend it on family and friends.
Right.
I'm the first one to want to pay for a bill.
Yeah.
Just because I just find that those are more important to me than the nice stuff.
Right.
The nice stuff I can get later. Yeah. I can get later. Like, I do like the nice stuff.
Yeah.
Trust me, I do. But I can wait for that.
Yeah. Right. So like delayed gratification.
Delayed
gratification.
Yeah.
And I think that's a huge lesson for a lot of people, I think, especially nowadays being, you know, in a culture and an environment where all these material goods are just being thrown at your face and, you know, like the social media algorithms and stuff like that, they're showing you what you want to see. And so there's a big lure to that and kind of, you know, rewarding yourself before the hard work. And I think that's really rewarding. So it's kind of, what's really interesting, it's kind of reflective. You got started in 2008, which was an extraordinarily challenging time in the market.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's very reminiscent to the market that we're in right now. You know, obviously getting started, you had, you know, you only made one sale in the first 6 months, which is not something to brag about. So let's talk a little bit about trajectory. So, you know, in 2009, you started making sales. You mentioned you started. What did you do that was different than you?
So in 2008, I had a mentor, and you know he did a lot for me, but a little old school. He's been in the business since 1979. So he says, contact every single person that you know, and tell them you're in the business and get their mailing address. So I would actually start snail mailing all my potential clients or my sphere of influence or anyone who had their mailing address. So I would actually sit and type a newsletter and send it out. And it just kind of, it's like a top of mind that Jeff is still in the business. Because it was tough for me because when I was 26, I looked like I was 17.
Yeah.
And it's like,
still look young.
Yeah, still look young. I know, I don't feel young.
Yeah, no wrinkles.
But what I did was, what happened was, I didn't get the credibility right away. It's like, oh, Jeff is a guy I went to school with. Jeff is the guy I got wasted with.
Right.
Jeff is the guy who crashed on my couch. Jeff is your friend that came over and I made him dinner while you guys played video games all night.
Right.
So now my friends aren't going to use me and their parents didn't. But I felt time in the business helped me.
Okay.
Oh, Jeff is still in the business. Oh, he must be doing okay.
Right.
And it just took time. It just kind of snowballed. So 2008, the 6 months, I did one deal. 2009, the first 6 months, I did two. But then the last 6 months, I did 10.
Wow, okay.
So things were rolling. And in terms of trajectory, yeah, I think just meeting and talking to you when I first signed on to Oakwood, I moved to Oakwood in January, but I've been fairly, it's incremental growth.
Mm-hmm.
It hasn't been great. I know that I'm a really good realtor, but I'm a horrible prospector.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So everyone thinks, oh, you know, real estate, you get into it, you're gonna make sales.
Right.
But you have to be in the lead generation business. Like, I can do the deal, I can market the home, I think I provide exceptional customer service. That's how I've continued to grow my business from
right.
zero advertising, but I've been continuing able to grow my business, and it's my goal is to make all the transactions seem very seamless for my client.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of take on the stress. So it's a really customer serviced approach, client care.
Right.
But to really make in the biz, you got to be a lead generating machine.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you have to be able to cold call or door knock or flyer / farm, you know, geographical marketing, or referral business. And with referral business, you would have to contact your database. And I didn't contact my database.
Mm-hmm.
I could pick up my phone and ask clients, you know, even though they're so happy with my services,
right.
ask them for a referral.
Hmm.
I can't, yeah, that's always been my struggle.
Yeah.
But I still get the referrals.
Right.
But maybe not as top of mind. Like, the good thing is, if I get a client into a home, you know, their coworker, their friend's looking to buy a place, they're like, oh yeah, you gotta use Jeff Pope.
Yeah.
What happens a year down the road? Your friend or a coworker is like, oh, I'm looking for a place. Oh, congrats. Good luck.
Yeah.
Right? So it's me not asking for the biz has kind of been holding me back.
Mm-hmm.
My office is right across the boardroom where you guys do all your Oakwood University. Every time you sneak, right. you guys sneak out, I go in there and just introduce myself.
Yeah.
And I tell them a little bit about myself. Like, hey, if you guys ever want, my door's always open. Just knock on it.
That's
if you have
so
questions,
nice. Yeah.
let me know. And I'll tell you everything that I did that you shouldn't do.
Right.
Right. Because you create these old habits and that kind of stick with you.
Mm-hmm.
So I have started to reach out to my database, asking for the biz. It's so hard for me to ask for a Google review.
Yeah.
But I've been doing that. However, my one saving grace is rental property.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a hardcore math nerd, so
mm-hmm.
I know how much is getting paid off my principal every year.
Right.
And having rental properties, once you hit that 10 to 15 year mark, when you're in the second or third term of your mortgage, that's where you start reaping the benefits of principal pay down.
Mm-hmm.
So your very first mortgage payment, it's always going to consist of a portion of principal and interest.
Right.
And your very, very first payment is
like all interest.
To
yeah.
interest. It's actually
yeah.
not all interest.
Yeah,
that's the perception.
Like, yeah.
That's what everyone says.
Right.
But even at today's rate at like 3.09, it's probably closer to like 50%.
Mm-hmm.
Right. But that last payment is like 99% principal, 1%
right.
interest. So when time goes on, you get way more principal pay down.
Mm-hmm.
So even me with my 2.5 properties that I own, if I have a bad year, I know $42,900 was paid on my principal last
mm-hmm.
year on my properties. So, you know, like, you get into real estate, but you should really acquire real estate.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so that's me. So it's, I don't have to push to get more sales, and it's kind of been my saving grace.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know what, that is incredible, and I think that's a really great lesson. You know, I would say 99% of people that listen to this podcast are realtors.
Right.
And, you know, speaking about like investment, and we got to almost like practice what we preach. We tell people to buy real estate, we tell people to buy investments, we tell people to save a little bit of money for your down payment so that you can buy that investment condo or that investment detached home, that triplex in New Westminster that has like hundreds of dead mice in it. Like, you know, we got to practice what we preach. And you know, and I was talking to this on another pod, but all the businesses, everything that we've done, my sister and I and our family have done, I think it all pales in comparison to the real estate investments that we've had, and how they performed and the rental income and all the rest of it. It's those decisions that are the best business decisions we made. That was better than starting brokerages and all these other things that we're doing. And I think it's something, a lesson that we all need to learn, is to I really love the when Jeff was mentioning about his journey, living lean, living with a moderation. And I did a podcast about this book I read by Benjamin Franklin. It was about and his real life motto was that moderation is trying to live like choose the middle path. Did you learn that in a philosophical way, or how did you kind of embrace that?
I think we're in a business where the consumer's perception of us is that we make a ton of money. But let's look at 2018, there's 24,500 sales. So there's a buy side, a sell side. So really double that, 49,000 ends. So 49,000 transactions divided by 14,000 realtors. The average realtor did 3.5 deals last year.
Mm-hmm.
It's not 3.5 all the way down. Some guys are doing 20, 30, 100 with a team of maybe 4. So there's a lot of agents who are not getting paid. Take out the part-timers, still 7 deals per agent, that's not much.
Mm-hmm.
So I knew right away, like, I had clients say, Jeff, you're probably the only agent that's not driving an Audi, BMW, or Mercedes.
Right.
And I'm like, I know, and that's okay. Like, if I wanted it, I could buy it.
Mm-hmm.
So the journey was 2008 I started, 2009 I bought my condo, 2010 I bought the old house, I lived in my parents' home still.
Mm-hmm.
Met my now fiance we started dating in 2011, and that's when I wanted to move into my condo.
Right.
And then I had a roommate. I rented out my den. It was a nice pad. It was
okay.
1,200 square feet, 1 bedroom and den, 2 level.
Wow.
So the den was on top, opened out to a patio, 14 foot ceilings.
Cool.
It was a huge den, so I had a roommate. And then 2013, I sold it. I didn't make much off it.
Mm-hmm.
I pretty much broke even. And then I bought a house that was $800K in North Burnaby.
Mm-hmm.
And even my mentor at the time, who owns a ton of property, he said, Jeff, you are paying an absolute premium on this home.
Right.
And it was a teardown that I revitalized.
Mm-hmm.
But the difference from 450 to 8 is 350K. I put some money into the renos, but that 350K was almost covered by my tenants,
because mm-hmm.
I rented out the basement suite.
Right.
So, yeah, no, I don't know where I learned it from, but it's not being a cheap thing. But I think seeing 2008 and seeing a lot of realtors having to adjust severely, because they had a lifestyle from 2000 to 2007 when the market was good, and having to adjust, get rid of their properties, I don't want to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Even I told you in 2009, the later half, I killed it, and I had 18 grand in commissions coming in the month of September.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point, I never made 18 grand in an entire
yeah,
year.
Right.
I blew it all, and then I didn't get a paycheck for another, even though I did deals,
yeah.
You don't get paid till later.
Till later, yeah.
So I didn't get paid for another like 3 months.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, and you're looking for your next deal. You never know where your next deal is coming from, especially when you just start out.
Yeah.
So I just learned to live lean. And then I got into a house, and then when my kid was born in 2017, I said, I need to make more moves. So then I got a HELOC, a home equity line of credit, on two of my properties. Those are the only two I had at the time. And then I purchased a condo.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, I competed against seven other offers, had to,
right.
you know, come with an all cash offer and forfeit my commission, but I just got it done and
right.
I paid $550. I'm being fully transparent. I don't
yeah.
actually really tell everyone
yeah.
my whole personal finance right. thing, but it's good because if a lot of realtors are hearing this, especially new ones, don't get caught up in the Louis and the Gucci purses and the Rolexes and the Teslas and like wait
right.
for that. Like don't. I remember I was at a Richard Robbins seminar. I was sitting beside a guy who was just starting off, and he's wondering if he should use his money for a down payment on a condo or buy a Tesla. For me, it's a no-brainer.
Yeah.
It's the condo.
Right.
Right? Buy the used car. Like, the model is going to look the same for 6 years.
Yeah.
Buy the early one that's 3 years old that depreciated 40%.
Mm-hmm.
It still looks the same.
Yeah.
Right? Like, that's how I've done it.
Right.
Maybe if I killed it, had a team, was, you know, doing 40, 50 deals a year, I might be living differently. But, yeah, it's not really what I want right now in my life.
Yeah.
So I'll backtrack. I hired a real estate coach last
yeah,
year.
I wanted to, yeah, hear, yeah. I want to hear about that.
So with the help of her and you, kind of sipping water in between my sentences. With the help of you and her, I was really trying to get my business to the next level. So one deal in 08, 12 in 2000 and 2009. And I think for the last 4 years, I've been averaging out about 18, 19 deals a year.
Yeah.
Which
is good. It's respectable. It's much higher than the industry average.
Right. It's yeah. higher than the industry average. But I feel like, oh, when I left my previous brokerage, I'm like, I should be at a higher level. And then you put a goal of 30. And then I told my coach, sorry, the goal isn't 27. The partner here said it's 30. She's like, okay, well, how are you going to get to 30? I'm like, I don't know. So I'm doing videos. I'm reaching out to my database. I'm doing more open houses. But I wasn't getting much traction.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just because the market's slow.
Right.
And I was putting a lot of pressure on myself. And then I kind of went through a revelation in the last 2 months. So it was the week before Mother's Day. And then my fiance, I just call her my wife because we have a kid.
Right. Yeah.
She's on my boys' softball team because they always need girls.
Right.
So, like, Jeff, you're off the team. Lori's in.
Lori's in.
So if you're not working, you're watching the kids. She's playing.
Right.
So, okay, great. So then one weekend they had a tournament. I'm like, okay, I'll make sure I work around it and I don't work. So then I was napping with my kid, and then I get a message from a buddy. He's like, hey, Avengers Endgame Wednesday, who's in?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, well, how many movies do I have to watch? He's like, probably about 19. You can get away with five. I'm like, okay, count me out. And then another guy says at 6 o'clock in the evening, he says, hey, 6 o'clock tomorrow, Sunday, Game of Thrones, my place. Hey, Poe, are you in? I'm like, well, I have 8 seasons to catch up on.
Yeah.
And then I'm like, guys, let me know when Creed 2 comes out.
They're
like,
right.
Bro, it's been out. Like, well, let me know when Creed 3 is out so I can catch up one movie, right? So I'm
yeah.
like, what do you do with your time? And I'm like, what do I do with my time? Sunday came along. I went to the park with my daughter to watch, you know, my friends and my wife play softball. And I'm seeing all these people drinking at their beer garden, playing softball, having fun.
Right.
And I looked to my wife. I'm like, this is what a weekend is like. She's like, yeah. And I'm like, I don't live. So I realize what I do with my time. After when I get home, like my rule to myself is I have to at least have dinner or put my kid to sleep.
Mm-hmm.
Preferably both.
Right.
But if not, I have to do at least one of those. So if I'm home for dinner, if I don't have to go back out to work, I would go to the park, we hang out, I put her to bed, and then I'm foam rolling, I'm stretching. While I'm plugged in, listening to a podcast on mindset, wealth, financial independence, or reading
right.
a book. So back to what I was saying about me being really obsessed with wealth is we didn't learn about money in school. They don't
mm-hmm.
teach you. They teach you like I know the last column of the periodic table has 8 valence electrons. I know there's 7 rings around Saturn. Like, yeah. What has that done for me?
Right.
I didn't learn about RSPs and TFSAs. I always heard the term, but what did it actually mean? Like, how do I create passive income? You work 40 years of your life, and that's supposed to set you for the remaining 30. And that scared me.
Mm-hmm.
So I became kind of obsessed with wealth, and I was always plugged into podcasts, listening and learning. And there's resources out there. Like, this is a great time to live.
Right.
You know, like, for example, you want to go see Anthony Robbins? That's a few grand.
Yeah.
But he has a podcast. Right? There's so many things you can learn. So
yeah, there's so many resources for sure.
Tons. Yeah. It's a great day and age to learn, but at the same time, you're really always kind of connected, and there's maybe too much information.
Right.
So I always try to narrow down my subscribe list. But not the Michael Yu podcast. That stays on, right?
Oh. That's all I'm going to say is on. Like, subscribe, rate.
Yeah. I can't rate. I use Google.
So yeah.
Otherwise, 5-star for sure. Okay. But I became kind of obsessed with wealth, and it wasn't healthy. And I'm 37, and that weekend, after the softball weekend, I realized I don't live. Monday, I had a chiropractor appointment, and I'm like, I'm 37. And you start seeing things about people passing away early from stroke,
right,
heart attacks. And then I came home on a Thursday, and I picked up my daughter, and I asked my dad, like, Dad, you were never home. You worked 2 jobs. I don't think you ever changed a diaper. You never took us anywhere.
Yeah.
When you didn't work 2 jobs, you fixed 3 to 5 cars on the weekend.
Right.
When did you say enough is enough and to take a step back? He said, I was 55. I said, well, that's 18 years for me.
Mm-hmm.
He's going through a bit of a medical scare right now. So I said, Dad, what would you tell 37-year-old Michael? His name's Michael.
Mm-hmm.
He said, son, I would just tell him to relax, be happy, and spend time with your family. So then the next week, my coach calls. I had my coaching call. And she's like, Jeff, what happened? I had to fill out a summary and what happened the last 2 weeks. I said, well, 30 deals is no longer the goal. She said, oh, how come? Like, well, for me to get from 18, 20 deals to 30, sure, I can make 100K. Expenses, costs, CRA, taxes. I'm taking 45, 50.
Mm-hmm.
Will that help me? Of course. But that's going to take me away from my family. I don't have the energy right now to get to that level and then hire an assistant because right. I'm tired. I'm a dad. Like, my kid's 2.5.
Yeah.
I want to be present. And I told her I took my vision board down and I threw it in the trash. And she's like, why? I said, well, things have changed for me. Mm-hmm. My priorities have changed. So on my vision board, I have a fancier watch. Don't need it.
Right.
I have a fancy watch. I never wear it.
Yeah.
It was a gift I gave to my fiance. So way back, we're talking about marriage. And right. I said, well, do we want to get married or do we want to buy a house? And she says, I don't even care for a wedding. I don't want to wear a dress. I don't want the attention. I don't care for it.
Yeah.
And I don't even want a ring. She said, but it'd be nice if we had matching watches. Like, right. Cool, because I like watches, right?
Yeah.
So I said, yeah, okay, yeah, we'll look into that, right? So she, one day I saw her on the on Cartier's website.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, hey, hon, you spelled Casio wrong. Right? I'm like, if we're going to look at those watches, like, I'm also buying you a ring.
Right.
Right, but so then in 2017, my daughter was born. I was 35. I came off one of my best years. And so then I never knew how to propose to her because she didn't want a ring. So how do right. I propose to someone who doesn't want a ring? And I was always trying to figure it out. The best time to propose to someone who doesn't want a ring is when she gave birth to your daughter. Right? So right. then I proposed to her, and then I went and bought us matching watches. Right? But then after like a month, the novelty wore off.
Right.
And I wear my Casio and my cheaper watch mm-hmm. all the time.
Yeah.
It's just, it tells time.
Right.
So,
but it's the value you place on it. It's not, yeah.
Yeah, the value you place on it. Like, sure, I really appreciate, you know, the movements and stuff like that. But for me, at that point, there's other things that I wanted on my vision board that was more important to me than a watch. I crossed that off. I crossed off the lakefront home.
Right.
Because it's just, you know, you're going to be paying property taxes on it. Now in BC, you're paying a vacant property tax on it. And how often am I going to actually use it?
Right.
I could just go anywhere in Airbnb. I crossed off building a dream home.
Hmm.
Because for me to finally get mortgage free and tear it down and spend $700K to build it, that's $3,500 a month in mortgage.
Yeah.
So I could actually just take down, go on vacation every 2 months.
Hmm.
So it just put things in perspective for me.
Like, this is actually very refreshing because
is it?
I think this is, you know, Jeff, Poe, this is like very refreshing because it's the exact opposite of what, 92% of conversations I have with people about their businesses. It's like, you know, it's like, how do we obtain more? And I think putting things into perspective, like, you know, spending more time with family and those other things, that has, you know, the lesson you learned from your dad has tremendous value.
Yeah.
And, you know, being very truthful and honest and just open about, you know, what is actually important to you. And like, and I think a lot of people don't do what you did, which is, you know, break it down numerically, like, this is what it's going to cost, this is the cost of it, this is, you know, what it is in actual dollars and cents and time,
and what can I do with that,
and
opportunity cost of that,
right? And, you know, thinking about it from, you know, from that perspective, I think is very refreshing, actually, because that's not what I hear very often. You know, I'm always hearing that, okay, I'm going for the, you know, big check, and you know, this is the, you know, and 90% of people that are listening to this podcast are in that, like, mindset. But, you know, putting it into perspective, I think is, have you ever heard of, well, there's a bunch of podcasts and stuff like that about minimalism and moderation. Yeah. And I don't know if you've heard about any of these kind of philosophies.
I have.
Yeah.
And I'm really trying to push that, like, sorry, Lori, but you are a bit of a hoarder. less is more.
Yeah.
Less is more. And going back to what you're saying about being refreshing, this being refreshing to hear, it took a long journey for me to kind of get to this. Like, I think the most important thing that people have to do is just be self-aware of who you are and what really makes you happy. Not what is perceived to be happy.
Mm-hmm.
Like, who cares about judgment? Who cares about other people, what they perceive of you? Because it doesn't matter. Like, anyone's judgment of you is the insecurity on themselves, not you.
Mm-hmm.
So someone's judgment of you has nothing to do with you, has everything to do with them. Right? So that's kind of how I just started to be. So if there is an issue, if I have a problem, I would say to myself, is this going to be an issue in a year? If it's like even real estate, mm-hmm. a collapsed deal, a bad inspection, is that going to be an issue in a year?
Right.
No, get through it. Is it going to be an issue in a year? Yes. Like medical?
Mm-hmm.
My daughter's sick? My family's sick? Okay, I can worry about that.
Mm-hmm.
But otherwise, just get through it and just eliminate the noise and just be really self-aware of you and just trying to be positive and don't want the best of everything. Make the best of everything.
Mm-hmm.
So going back to my coaching call, I said there's a few things on the bucket list that are still there, right? I have the car that I really want is on there, and a vacation that I want to treat my sister, her husband, her kids, and my parents to go to, mm-hmm. Hawaii.
Right.
That's what I want to do.
Yeah.
And put that in perspective, maybe that costs 15 grand. If I were to build a new home, that's 4 months of mortgage.
Yeah.
So for me now, the goal is just to live lean. Like, we show houses all the time, Michael. Like, this is our mm-hmm. job.
Right.
I got to the point where I got desensitized. A nice home or a really, you know, rough home. But at the end of the day, it's a home. And you make it a home.
Right.
Whether you're cutting your food and prepping dinner on a granite countertop or a laminate countertop,
mm-hmm.
it serves the same purpose.
Yeah.
Right? Like, whether you're going to watch the TV, so it doesn't matter if it's on, like, you know, like, built-in shelvings, that is, you know, the millwork was done on site, and it's custom-made, and coffered ceilings, like, it's the light above around the ceiling. It's yeah. just, so I learned to just be, like I said, like make the best of everything.
Right.
And so just that weekend after my coaching call, like I took my wife on a date night. We organized a barbecue at the park, played volleyball, basketball, had kids running around. I'm like, I'm living, like I'm finally living. And then last weekend I was in Whistler. It was a last minute getaway because I had a free weekend. I got a cheap Airbnb and I just spent the whole time. I told the wife, like, hey, look, this isn't a real vacation.
Right.
We haven't got a win in a year. I'm a realtor. I make decent money. I had my best year last year.
Mm-hmm.
And I haven't got a vacation in a year. I don't need to. Because I just try to be present, be a great dad.
Right.
Take her out to the park, take her out to the beach. So then even just taking her to Whistler for a cheap vacation.
Yeah.
And I worked a bit. Like, I was on the phone. Carla, my business partner, she had yeah. my back in case I needed her, like, physically to show homes.
Right.
But otherwise, I worked a bit. And otherwise, like, we went for ice cream, went for nice dinners, we went to the lake, went to the park, the playground. It was like, that's, I don't have to fly miles for that.
Mm-hmm.
We live in British Columbia. Like, yeah, we live in our backyard. Yeah. Right? So, yeah, this is kind of what I've been going through lately, and it's been a great revelation with kind of growth. And I think people get that in their 30s. Like, I'm 37, so right. I had a kid. A lot of things have changed, but yeah, it's, you know, I can go and kill the real estate game and start prospecting when she's in full-time school in grade one. But right now, if I don't have pressing appointments or deals that need my attention, I can just do my 2-3 hours of emails and maybe don't take my kid to my parents' house to watch her, and I'll spend the day with her.
You know, that's amazing. And I think, you know, I don't have kids, but, and I wanted to touch on family and family and being a realtor and kind of the balance that you're striking. And I think
no balance.
Yeah. I think that it's really great. You know, they say that, you know, especially from year 0 to 6, the human mind at that point is like it's a total sponge. It's a different experience. It's before you reach consciousness, and there's things like, you know, memorable consciousness. So it's such a moldable period of time, and these observations that people have and the bonds and connections that are grown in this like very, very narrow part of people's lives have impact for them. It's kind of like casting a stone or throwing a rock in space. This is the direction it's going to head, and it has like a wide impact when we're in our 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s. So for your daughter, like these things that you're doing is going to be, that's her looking for her partner in the future. That's her like knowing what being safe feels like,
right?
Being cared for feels like, having fun feels like. Like, it's all in there, and it's something that we don't remember, because from 0 to 4 or 5 or 6, we don't remember that anymore. Like our first, like I've been challenged to, like, what was your first memory? And I remember, like, oh my god, like thinking back, but what my first memory was, right. I don't know what your first memory was, but it's, you know, it's always something like really strange and mundane, and that was your first memory,
right.
And so you're just almost like this like eternal witness, when you're at this very early age. So I think, you know, you make a really, really good point, and it's like I was saying, it's highly refreshing, because you're really talking about less is more, and yeah. You know, listening to, you know, your and really understanding where some of those goals that you set for yourself are actually coming from. Are they coming from within, or are they coming from outside? Are they coming from pressures on the outside? Are they coming from are they coming from jealousy? Are they coming from envy? Are they coming from other places, like are they coming from gluttony? Are they coming from greed? Are they coming from, or is it truly coming from who you are, your essence, like the being that you, and what you're, you know, without being too like weird and spiritual, but like what your soul's crying out for, right? Right. And I think it's something that's, you know, obviously super refreshing, which I think is a great lesson for me, for sure, and for all of us, I think, to really reflect and analyze that. So was there a period, like, how did you reflect on this? Was it like an epiphany? Was it a moment, or was it in some quiet contemplation, or what was it?
Like, it's in the last 2 months, actually not even the last month, like 2 months ago, that whole month was kind of really a lot of changes in my mindset in terms of being more grateful, right? Like, I know I've always been grateful. Like, I have always been grateful at really being cognizant of it. Because when I talked to my coach that coaching session, I said, the reason why I threw out my vision board is because this stuff actually won't make me happy. And I said, when I was 2010, I totally forgot about this. I coached elementary school basketball for 10 years. And at the beginning, I coached the boys' team and the girls' team. And my sister was pregnant. I'm like, oh, I hope you have a boy. And I'm coaching the boys and I'm coaching the girls. And I said, okay, guys, put the ball in the bin. The boys try to shoot it and throw it in, whereas the girls walk in and place it in. They sit down cross-legged.
Yeah.
And like, hey, Anne-Marie, my sister, I'm like, I hope you have a girl. 2010, got the keys to my house in New Westminster. That day I got my keys, I went to a barbecue, played beach volleyball, someone dove into my knee and tore my MCL.
Yeah.
I had a second degree sprain, didn't have a full tear. I was laying on my my bed, and at the time my sister already had her kid, and I spent the whole day with my niece on my bed.
Mm-hmm.
And like, that kind of brought me back to reality. Once I could kind of get moving again, I was painting a house with crutches on.
Hmm.
I had crutches under my armpit, painting the house. So I grinded it. And so going back to like what made me kind of go through this change is, at that time, all I said was, I just want a house and a little girl. And then my coach said, and you have that and more.
Mm-hmm.
And that was it.
And that was 9 years ago. Wow.
Well, yeah, that's when I wanted a house and a kid.
Right.
And then it happened. It happened 2 years ago. I had the house in 2013. I had my daughter in 2017. So, like, why am I beating myself up for not having more, not having a lakefront house, not building a dream home, not being at 30, 40 deals, not having a whole team? I can get there if I wanted to, but if it was really important to me, I would have by now. If it was really important for me to watch Game of Thrones, watch all these movies, I would have done it by now.
Right.
Right? So it's just, maybe it's important for me to just continue to grow. And I even sometimes talk to realtors about this. I actually did an Instagram post. I deleted it because I took a photo of a receipt and my address was on it. But I said, as a realtor, we wear so many hats. We're like a counselor, a therapist, we're an accountant, marketer, lead generator. And all we're trying to do is sell a home. But I said, if anyone needs to reach out and ask and pick away, ask me. I'd love to help. Right? Because it's a lonely business. Like, we're in our office, we're in a car.
Right.
And when we're with our clients, half the time I'm not myself. Because if I was my real self, like, my close friends are like,
yeah,
hey, Jeff, we haven't seen your hair. Like, you always wear hats.
Yeah.
Where's your sweatpants?
Yeah.
Right? But, like, yeah, so, but usually I'm not fully myself because it's just, I have to be a really
professional. You got to be a professional and you want to, you want to serve them well, right?
Eventually I warm up, like, I just kind of go back and forth from being goofy and then I'm really professional. But, yeah, it's a lonely business. So I kind of put that branch out there. If you guys ever want to pick my brain or any new people who want to, you know, ask about my successes and what I did wrong, I'm fully willing to share. You can tell from this podcast, I am fully transparent. I don't hide stuff. I don't sugarcoat. I don't try to make things look better than it is. It's the truth.
You know what? And that's like, that is amazing. And being willing to help and to being willing to, you know, be open and transparent, because I think a lot of people, you know, they live in maybe potentially like a duality, you know, where it's like this is their real self. And I actually, you know, I'm guilty of this as well, you know, on occasion. You know, there's their real self and then there's their work self or their that what they want to show, you know.
A little facade.
Yeah, it's a bit of a facade. Right. I try to keep the lines as close as possible. You know, I think we're all human beings. And deep down, I'm pretty emotional. But then, you know, in any front-facing or client-facing things, I'm like not emotional at all, even though it does impact me. But I tried to, you know, because that doesn't really serve the people, you know, in that sense. So I think there is a bit of duality there, and then having that kind of having those lines as close as possible, right. You know, I think we can all, maybe it's, you know, I'm open to it, but like, you know, when we're in a profession where we're serving other people, they need to be, I feel like we need to be able to put ourselves in their shoes and how they want to be served and serve them in the way that they want to be served,
right.
Versus, okay, this is how I want to do it and this is what it is. So I think there are some elements of that, but you know, that's really great to be able to offer that to other people, and I have caught Jeff you know, talking to a lot of the agents about their journey in their business, and because especially now with the market as it is, it's funny, like when the market was super hot, a lot of agents were complaining because like, I can't get this, I can't get that, and then the market is super not hot, and then it's the same thing. It's like, it's so hard out there. Like, so it's like, it's always kind of
real estate is tough.
Yeah,
it could be hard, and the public perception is it's easy. You just show homes, and this is the view, this is granite, and you check the MLS. This is a 3-piece bathroom. Like, oh, you don't need to look at the MLS for that. But no, it's a lot of work. So in the hot market, people are like, Jeff, you must be killing it. Like,
yeah.
Well, no, I'm helping buyers, and my buyers have to compete against 3 to 15 other offers,
right?
And some of those offers are all cash, so I didn't get a deal done till I wrote 7 offers from a client because they were not willing to go subject free.
Yeah,
because I can't advise them to not do the due diligence.
Mm-hmm.
But in reality, is when you have people coming from a foreign country who have a duffel bag of cash,
right,
and don't write subject to inspection or financing. And sometimes they don't even have the strata docs available for you to read it, but they still go and pay $800,000 or like $200K over the asking price.
Right.
How can a local 30-year-old couple with a kid on the way compete?
Mm-hmm.
So it was a lot of work. And you know how it was. Monday hits the market. Thursday, maybe an open house. Saturday, Sunday, open house. Tuesday, offers at 6 p.m. So my Sundays were read 3 sets of strata documents.
Right.
That took me 12 hours.
Yeah.
And they come in all cash, like not all cash meaning no conditions.
Right.
And we go in on a Tuesday and I'm working 3 offers and I have my phone tethered to my laptop and plugged in so the battery doesn't die. I'm working 3 different offers and then you're 0-for-3.
Right.
And then you start again. So that market wasn't easy. If you're the listing agent, yes, it was easier for sure. You list it, it's gonna go off the shelf.
Mm-hmm.
If you overpriced it, the market was gonna catch up, fine.
Right.
But on the buyer side, it's tough. And I have this one friend, I'm not gonna name names, close friend of mine, but he's like, when I treat the meals, when I buy a fancy drink sometimes, even though I am cheap, when I buy myself a fancy drink or I treat people, he's like, man, real estate must be good. Like, no, it is good, but it was what I did 10 years ago that was good.
Yeah.
Buying my investment property while you guys were out partying, while you're out at happy hours, while you're out concerts and vacations, I was dealing with literally mice feces. I was dealing with shit. I was dealing with tenants who up and left, and I had to find a place to put their furniture.
Mm-hmm.
I had to deal with evictions. I had to deal with someone painting over all of my outlets and light switches. I had to deal with cops coming to my rental property because there's a fight. I've dealt with having an iPad out, learning how to do a backsplash, writing down a list, and going to Home Depot, buying it, and doing it.
Mm-hmm.
I did all that. I learned about how to create wealth and learn about money. I learned about how to, you know, reduce my taxable income, which also hurt me in terms of buying a home.
Mm-hmm.
I did all that while everyone's at the beach, you know, like the open houses, like it's always 2 to 4.
Right.
And you know, the realtors say, hey, come by and say hi. Like nobody's coming. It's a nice day. They're at the beach or on a patio.
Right.
But we were working. We were working 7 days a week. We're on call. The toll it could take on some relationships too. If you don't have a spouse that's understanding, it's tough too.
Was she always understanding?
She's understanding.
Yeah,
she's good. She's great. I do feel guilty at times because she does say, I haven't seen you. Like, you know, you have a daughter. I'm a single mom. You know, but overall, she gets it. She gets it. She works part-time, and she has that luxury because she deals with living with a realtor.
Mm-hmm.
She deals with me sometimes not being home, sometimes working till 11, 12. She deals with me. It's hard to, like, you have a deal fall apart, you put the phone down. It's hard to be present and play with your kid.
Yeah.
With a smile on, because, oh, man, I just lost a deal. Or even worse, like, sometimes you go to bed with your client's problems.
Yeah.
They sold their home, they got the truck packed, and the buyer didn't complete. Well, hey, don't worry. We're protected with contract law. You could sue them. But they don't care.
Right.
They have nowhere to stay.
Yeah.
I don't go to bed at night saying, oh, cool, no problem. Deal with it. Right? So, I do that. Going back to the whole, if it's not going to be a problem in a year, just deal with it. So you deal with it. You figure it out.
Right.
But yeah, my spouse is understanding. She does do a lot of the heavy lifting with the kid. I don't think I give her enough credit. I don't think she gives me enough credit. you know, but at the same time, it's she understands that she knows what I need to do for the family.
Yeah.
And she appreciates it. And that's so important. That's so important. So, you know, anyone who's listening, if you're single, just find someone that will actually understand.
Yeah.
Have them live with you. Right? You know, it's just like, you know, the Bachelor, the Bachelorette.
Right.
They go on these, like, fancy dates. Yeah, all exactly. Paid for. It's like, perfect. Oh, I'm going to sweep to this mountaintop on a helicopter and have wine. They're ready for you.
Yeah.
Well, what happens in real life?
Right.
How are they with their family? How are they with work? How are they with... You know, I even reach out to a lot of dads, new dads. They have a kid, like, hey, congrats, man. If you ever need anything, you need a vent, you need anything, just give me a shout. You need to go out for a drink, let me know. Because I think being a dad, like, the days of deadbeat dads are gone. Like, we are carrying the kid. We're carrying the diaper bag. We change the diapers. We want to be present. We want to be there.
Right.
On top of that, we live in Vancouver where housing costs are so high. You got to hustle. You got to pay the bills. And at that age,
a lot of pressure.
When you're in your 30s and later 30s, family gets sick. Like, there's a lot on your plate. There's a ton on your plate. So those dates on the mountaintops on The Bachelor or whatever, and then you find out that the relationship didn't last after the show, it's like, well, yeah, because he's not taking on shopping sprees and, you know, like, trips.
Yeah,
because
it's fantasy.
Yeah, you deal with everyday stresses, and in your 30s and 40s, like, I know I was listening to your podcast before, I know your father passed away, so it's like when you deal with that kind of stuff, it's a lot of pressure on you. And if for a guy, like, hey, don't be sissy, like, man the F up. Like, you know what, man? Sometimes if you need an outlet or you need to just kind of vent, or honestly, you need a shoulder to cry on, fuck, call someone.
Right? And I think that's tough for a lot of guys. You know, especially, like, Jeff is a sports guy. He's kind of like, he comes from a, like, an athletic background.
No, I don't. Well, I'll go on that later.
Yeah, okay. I know, I know that Jeff is a sports fan. He loves basketball. He loves, like, you know, and he's an athletic guy. I mean, on the softball team, he's like, I never play. And then he's like, bing. He's doing really well. So, you know, and that's tough for a lot of people to admit, you know, especially a lot of macho guys to admit. And I think by holding a lot of those things in, you know, it leads to a lot of, you know, like, troubling mental disorders, and also just, you know, and having no outlet and feeling really isolated and feeling really alone.
Resentment to whoever you're living with or who you're with. Like, it's just, it's not healthy. So, going back to my sports background. So, this is so embarrassing. My first language was Mandarin. My mom spoke Mandarin in the house the whole time. And then once you start going to school, everyone's speaking English.
Right.
So then you're not around it. My parents didn't even speak Mandarin to each other. They spoke a dialect. So I'm not around it at all.
Yeah.
So here I am, speaks Chinese, but then I'm in ESL. And now I forgot my first language. I don't speak Mandarin at all.
Mm.
And then I was in Chinese school and piano, and my mom never let me play sports. Didn't make the basketball team to try it out because I sucked.
Yeah.
I made volleyball for some reason. I was riding the pine, but I made the team. And then once I worked at Sport Check, I bought every single sporting good imaginable. Right? These guys right. are like, hey, you want to play hockey tonight? We'll just do stick and puck, but we got goalies. Like, cool. Yeah. They're like, okay, man, we'll see you there. I'm like, hey, man, are you left or right? They're like, I'm left. This guy's right. Like, could you guys both bring a stick? Like, why? I'm like, I don't know which hand I am.
Yeah.
Right? I could kind of skate because my parents put me skating right. lessons as a kid. So then, like, yeah, like, I was 21. I had a left-hand stick, a right-hand stick, but I could feel I could turn left better, so I could eventually stop on my right side, so I should probably shoot left. But now that I think of it, I should probably be right.
Yeah.
I like to stop both ways.
Right.
So I bought everything. You know, I started playing basketball more. I, you know, played softball. I play softball now. I golf
mm-hmm.
when I can. I actually retired from golf, but... I'm playing all my sports now.
Yeah.
But then, like, these delicate piano fingers always get stuck and hurt and sprained. And
right.
It's probably why I'm foam rolling all the time. His body wasn't made for, like, any sort of physical activity.
You're meant to count beans.
Yeah, exactly. That's not like math. Yeah. My mom's like, yeah, you should be a pharmacist or accountant right. or get a government job. Yeah. Right? Like, that's even my mom to this day.
Right.
It's like, real estate is so stressful. You know, it's like, well, I'm good. It's okay, right? So...
So maybe, like, because we always talk a lot about, like, business tips and things like that, but I'd love to, you know, because of, you know, obviously Jeff's experience, so you're really into numbers. So what tools do you use for budgeting? What tools do you use for, like, that aspect, investments?
Spreadsheets.
Yeah.
Spreadsheet, just learn how to use it. Just simple formulas.
Right.
Equal this cell plus that cell. Equal sum bracket highlight whole array of cells, boom, right? Like, all my investments.
So you taught yourself all this. Well, you went to business school.
I went to business school, so there was a course where we learned about some of these things. It was really simple Excel.
Mm-hmm.
But if not, like, pen and paper. Pen and paper and mortgage calculators.
Mm-hmm.
How much do you pay off your principal? You know? How much down payment? Therefore, you know how much your mortgage will be. So your mortgage will be, on a 25-year mortgage, this amount.
So you actually use that calendar that where they gave us, that calculator.
I actually have it. I have it.
Principal and interest. Yeah.
Stewart Packard.
Yeah.
It's like B2 something. Yeah. I don't remember, but I have it in my actual laptop.
That is hilarious.
Right now.
Wow.
I use it all the time.
Oh my gosh. You're one of the only people.
Online and find one. But yeah, I'm old school. But yeah, pen and paper, and you just kind of find out what your returns are. And in Vancouver, yeah, everything was negative cash flow when I bought it. So that's why I just didn't go out.
Mm-hmm.
I stayed home. Like, for me to buy a game, an Xbox game was like $50.
Yeah.
I could spend that on 3 drinks.
Yeah.
So I just stayed and played video games.
Right.
Or I worked out. Like, I just, you know, I just try not to spend. I'm not saying that's how you live life. I mean, you have to reward yourself. And I do. But just, yeah, you know, just find what makes you happy. Not trying to please other people. Like, I find a lot of people think what makes them happy is what's going to make the perception to other people look great. Like,
right.
If you saw a vacation, like, you know, nice clothes, nice
right.
purse, nice watch, nice car. But, like, if you don't care for a car, if you're the person who's like, I just need a car to get from A to B,
mm-hmm.
but you drive, like, a really, really nice car, then you don't need one.
Yeah.
If you're, like, when I go to Vegas, I stay a day sober and I go to the tracks. And I take, the last time I went, I took a Nissan GTR and a Porsche 911 Turbo around the track. Because, like, I love supercars.
Yeah.
So, I,
So you got it all out of you.
No.
No? It's still in you?
It was on my vision board. Like, yeah, it's the one car I do want.
Right.
Everyone had the Porsche 911, you know, poster.
Yeah.
But then I can't get one now because it's like, it's not practical.
It's not,
SUV,
yeah.
You got the ABC, you know, full on dad.
That's right.
So, you know, like, maybe
comfort,
I'll get,
shock
maybe
absorbers.
I'll get the Porsche Cayenne GTS. Like, that's on my vision board.
Right.
A 2013 or 2014 Porsche Cayenne GTS. And the reason why I want that year is because that's the last year of the naturally aspirated V8. Because I'm going through a midlife crisis. My Toyota 4Runner makes me definitely feel like a dad. But yeah, and My Toyota that I have right now is the very first car that I have brand new.
Mm-hmm.
Luckily, it held its value. But, and this is just another example. 2015, I was shopping for a car because my sports sedan had so many problems. but was still cheaper. Buying that used with all the problems I had with it
right.
was still cheaper than any lease.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so 2015, I sat in a 2016 X5 M Sport, about 85K. I had a pickup truck for 10 years,
mm-hmm.
and I sat in a 2016 4Runner, and then it was really like bumpy, had body sway, mm-hmm. big buttons, really utilitarian. The same engine it's had in there for decades, the right. same transmission, it was bulletproof, but I missed having the truck. So, and that was like, I negotiated hard as if like real estate.
Yeah.
I sat there for 6 hours negotiating. It was December 30th. I had all day. Anyway, so yeah. I got it for like 47.5. If you look on Auto Trader right now and compare 2016 BMW X5s to 2016 Toyota 4Runners, they're now about 40. So one came down 45 grand,
mm-hmm.
one came down 7.
Yeah, there you go.
So it goes back to like, I want that Porsche Cayenne GTS, but I'm not paying 130 for it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to get it at 45. Right? Hey, realtors, you can write off a finance. You could write off a car that's not a lease. It's called capital cost depreciation. You can do that.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So it's just being smart with your money. But now I'm still at the point like, am I able to buy that yet? Because I love cars.
Right.
But, you know, like, can I wait till later? Can I put money in the RESPs? Can I save for my daughter's future? Can I mean, I just read this book called The Latte Factor, and it's, if you don't know anything about money, that's a good starting point.
Yeah.
And it's...
What's it about?
It's about, they made money lessons in a fictional kind of story.
Right.
So this girl who works in New York, and she's kind of working the 9-to-5 and
yeah.
not getting ahead, and with a lot of debts, and she runs into this guy, and he tells her about money, teaches her about money, and a latte is $5.50 a day.
Yeah.
That's $2,000 a year.
Right.
If you invest, okay, this is what I learned, and this really pissed me off because I didn't learn this in school. And I'm giving this out to all my my wife's nieces.
Mm-hmm.
When they turn 18, I'm buying them this book. If you invest $2,000 a year from age 19 to 26, that's 8 years. 8 times 2,000 is $16,000. 18, 19, 20, 21, 22, 23, 24, 25. Sorry, 19 to 26.
Yeah.
That's 8 years. At 27, you put zero for the rest of your life. You only put $2,000 a year for 8 years, and if you find something that makes a 10% return, I know that's hard, but just in theory. Or person B invests $2,000 a year at 27
for the rest
until 65.
Yeah.
Who has more money?
Right.
Right. Hey, that's like 40 year power of compound interest.
Yeah. Power of compound interest. Like, it's
that
like
person put $80,000, yeah. another person put 16, and one person's a millionaire, another one made 800.
Right. It's so there's a book, The Intelligent Investor by Benjamin Graham, and it's boring as all fuck, but but like you know, it's what Warren Buffett uses and talks about the compounding effects of money, and you know, it's never too late. So don't like be discouraged if you're listening to this and you're 50 years old or whatever. It's never too late. But you know, what I'm a huge believer in, and I'm really glad that Jeff's talking about budgeting and something. If you know, like, what helped me is when I met someone that was really good with money, I like just like I almost did like a podcast style interview, and I was just grilling them, like,
right.
exactly how do you do it? How did you do this? Like, if you meet people, and because they're all these people are like Jeff, they're just so open, they're just so helpful. Like, you know, I learned all taxation. I met this Hong Kong accountant. He taught me everything about taxation, all the intricacies of personal tax versus corporate tax. And, you know, at what points do you do this and do that? What are the limitations? Where, you know, like what budgeting you should use that's appropriate in what income brackets? And so, like, he would sit there and I would just ask him questions. And we would sit there for like, and this is someone that I met when I was 21 years old. We would sit there for 3 or 4 hours, and I would ask him about everything because, you know, being very open, my family lost our family home because of taxation problems when I was 13 or 14 years old. So we had to move into a rental house. It was a bit traumatic because I was like boxing my stuff, and then there was a for sale sign outside of my house, and I was like, okay, what's this? And I hate to put it this way, but the government, the taxation, the like CRA, they're ruthless. They do not care that you have four children, five children. They don't care that you're taking care of your ailing grandparents. They don't care. They do not care. So, obviously, observing these things growing up, I was like, it was a little bit of a marker or lesson for me. I'm like, okay, that can't happen to me. That can't happen to my family. That can't ever happen again. And so, like, that's a lesson. That's my father's lesson that fortunately enough that I got to learn. And I'm so glad that I learned it because, I could have, like Jeff was saying, you could, you start doing well in business, you can ball out of control, right?
Real estate is so easy to get into lifestyle.
Oh, right? Yeah, for sure.
Right? Like I say, I made 18K in that 1 month, even though I made nothing the first half, yeah. But like, I blew it all.
Yeah.
It's so easy to get caught up just trying to, just keep up with the Joneses in real estate.
Yeah.
This guy's got a new this and this,
right.
This parking lot, honestly, I remember I was sitting at a table with a bunch of guys, honestly good guys, but they're talking about cars and watches. Oh, I love both of those. I need to leave. Because right. I want it, I'll get it, but not right now. I could wait.
And that's the thing.
Be patient with it.
Yeah,
right?
It's all proportionality. Yeah. That's how I kind of mentally look at things. It's all based on proportionality. So like Jeff was saying, in the future, that won't feel like it would. In the future, when hopefully we're doing super well with business and investments and all the rest of it, buying the Tesla won't feel as like oh my gosh as it was when if I did that 10 or 15 years ago. So I think that is some semblance of that, although I don't know what your perspective is on it.
Yeah, it's for me it's more, I think no one teaches people about money. And, you didn't learn in high school, you didn't learn it really in college, unless you actually went, and learned about finance. So no one taught realtors about money. And they don't teach you about saving a portion of your commissions for taxes
right.
and savings. They work so hard, just going back to what you're saying, they work so hard, I want to reward myself. You know what my reward is when I close a deal? I come home, I give a high kick because Frederick Eklund from,
from Million Dollar Listing
in New York, he does a little high kick. So I do it and I said, hey hon, we're ordering pizza tonight. Right? It's like my treat. There's a pizza joint down the street, which is a little expensive, they're deep dish. But when I close a deal, we get pizza or sushi, maybe the kid.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Right? But otherwise it's just we're cooking at home, we're getting pho or Chinese food.
Right.
Right? It's just, for me, it's fine. But going back to how no one teaches you about money, one group buys a car.
Mm-hmm.
Or they buy, jewelry. They buy clothes. And then there's another group of people, they invest it, create the return to give them a free car.
Mm-hmm.
Give them a free purse.
It's a slow way though.
It's a slow way, yeah. But for me that's the way I'm doing it.
That's the smart way, and I think I agree with you 100%.
Create the return that will pay for your needs instead of paying for it right away, and that's going to depreciate. So yeah, I've taken this into my business. I'm
when you advise your clients, obviously.
I'm a shitty salesperson. I'm a great realtor. I'm not a good I've talked myself out of so many deals. 2009, I sold my truck January, February. Mm-hmm. Remember that snowstorm at the beginning of
2009? Oh, yeah, yeah.
So I had an Acura TL. It was a used one. I had my Sorel boots in the trunk, and I had a shovel. And I live in North Burnaby. I drove to Steveston. I got a client from a mortgage broker who referred me.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, yeah, small client, good friend of mine. 64-year-old first-time homebuyer. You're my mom's age. So I got her finally into a home after shoveling countless parking spots for myself showing homes.
Right.
Got her into a home, read it. The building was a sieve. It was a leaky condo. I told her to walk away. Told her to walk away. Mortgage broker calls me. What the F are you doing? Like, you're never going to make it in this business. Like, you're too honest. You're not, never going to make it in this business. Close this bitch.
Right.
We walked away from the deal. Mortgage broker 2 weeks later calls me. Thank you for doing that. She just lost her job. Imagine I put her through that deal because I only made $5,000 at that point.
Right.
Imagine because I needed money and I put my interests above my clients.
Yeah.
Pushed into that deal, saying it's not a big deal. Shout out, take care of it, levy, whatever. And you lose your job, you can't complete. Now you have a lawsuit.
Mm-hmm.
So I've always done that. Clients are like, some clients want to spend so much more on a home. Like, I had a client who's looking at the 2.2 million range.
Right.
And they just had a kid, and they're planning another one. I'm like, well, you don't need that. Going back to what I said, you make it a home. Mm-hmm. You don't need the fancy stuff. Your early 30s. Like, this is, you're spending premium already in an expensive market. Like, live in your means. Oh, it's going to catch up. Sure, but how are you going to service that? So it always goes back to knowing your numbers.
Right.
Even when you get a bank approval, your mortgage broker says you're pre-approved to purchase this much. The lenders, when they run those numbers, they have no idea how you spend your money.
Mm-hmm.
You might actually save a ton and never go out, and they're actually giving you less than what you could actually afford. Or they give you more because you go out and, like, what's one night dinner for two at Cactus Club with two drinks and an appetizer and a dessert? That's $100. You do that twice a week. That's $800 a month.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that bank pre-approval doesn't show that. You spend, you go clubbing, you do bottle service, you go on vacations, and they max their pre-approval, which I get. In right. Vancouver, a lot of people max their budget because they want to get the most home they could get because it's still small, because it's expensive. But
right.
You need to know if the numbers work for you with your lifestyle, and you need to budget. Like I said, going back to that spreadsheet, what's my fixed cost? What's my rent? Or mortgage, what's the property taxes divided by 12, what's the strata fees, what's my car payments, how much is my gas, my insurance, do I have benefits, if not, how much is, you know, pharmaceutical drugs, how much is my massage or my chiro, mm-hmm. how much is my meals, do you track your meals times 3 months, divide it and find it out, and a lot of this helped. I did this from day one, but I really dug deep with it since probably over a year ago. There's a company called Enriched Academy.
Mm-hmm.
And I swear people probably think I'm just endorsing or get paid, but they came into my previous brokerage. Maybe they should come to ours.
Sure.
Honestly. Well, they, I think they started their business model targeting brokerages.
Because
real estate agents are notorious for not saving their money.
Yeah.
So they were on the Dragon's Den. And they pitched and got some
dragons. I remember them. Yeah.
Right. And then they're teaching financial literacy. So I went to the event. I signed up for the coaching. Some people are like, oh, man, it's like $2,400. They can show you how to save $200 a month.
Mm-hmm.
That's where you're $2,400 a year.
Right.
They taught me how to invest. I pulled all my investments with financial advisors. I'm doing self-directed trading now.
Mm-hmm.
But they really helped me learn how to budget more, know my numbers. It was huge. It's huge. And they came and said, in real estate, there's a lot of agents who make $300K to $500K and their net worth is zero. But there's always that hidden, like, agent who makes $80K to $120K and their net worth is over a mil.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to be that guy. I want to be that guy.
Right.
I am that guy.
Yeah.
Right. So, it's true.
You know, that's this has been super informative. This has been very eye-opening, very refreshing as well. I think it's one of our best pods. Jeff, you know, I hate to...
I don't know
if it's a high compliment, but it is what it is. So Jeff, just on a, like, on a closing note, because we're, you know, we've already gone past an hour and 15 minutes here. You know, is there something that you wanted to share with, you know, prospective and future business people? Like, you asked your dad, the young Mike, like 37, what would you do? So, like, let's rewind it. So the 27-year-old Jeff Poe.
It's just don't want the best of everything. Make the best of everything. Like, we live in an awesome country. We live in BC. We live in Vancouver. It's expensive, but, like, just be really self-aware. I think the most important thing is being really self-aware of who you are. Listen to Gary Vaynerchuk. Gary V, his podcast. It's a lot of business stuff, but there's a lot of personal growth stuff
in right there.
And it's just, yeah, being self-aware of who you are, what makes you happy, and just kind of double down on your strengths and be aware of all that.
Right? I think that's a perfect way to end the podcast. Jeff, thanks so much for being on the Michael U podcast.
I was really nervous for this. Yeah,
this was really awesome. Good, and the time just flew. So, Jeff, what's the best way someone could get in touch with you?
I'm on Instagram a lot.
So, okay.
Poh Real Estate, P-O-H Real Estate. DM me. And like I say, any new agents, even veteran agents. Like, remember when I told you, like, we need to do, like, a veteran reboot?
Yeah.
Because I see all these people coming into the business. They join with Oakwin. They do the Oakwin University training. And I'm like, I need to go in there. Like, Carla, I need to go in there. She's like, why? Like, you've been in this business for, like, 11 years now. I'm like, I just want to relearn things and unlearn bad habits. But... Mm-hmm. Anyone who wants to pick my brain, I'm an open book. Investing or saving, talking about real estate, what I would have done differently. I mean, that's another podcast.
We got to do this again. Jeff. Yeah.
DM me.
Yeah.
Reach out to me. Poh Real Estate. My number is 604-306-0059. You can text me as well. Yeah, it's the best way to hold me.
That's awesome, Jeff. And thank you guys for listening to the Michael U podcast. If you don't mind, because I'm a fanatic, maybe I need it for my self-esteem. Please like, rate, and subscribe to the pod. And we'll see you next time. Jeff, that was great.
Yeah, awesome. Thanks.
Yeah, okay. A good pod.